Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Inside Trek, the Mangy Talks podcast. We give you the inside track on all things Star Trek. I am your host, Lee. I'm joined by my co-host, BJ. BJ, how are we doing today?
I'm doing quite well. I'm excited to finish up this wild three-parter with you.
I need to work on a different intro where I'm like, here I am on the deck of Deep Space Nine with my engineer, first lieutenant, BJ. Something in world. I got to work on something in world.
Coming up the turbo lift?
Beamed in and beamed out. Phasers ready. Yeah, whatever. Yep. Things like that. Yeah, we are on the second episode of season two. This is the second of a three-parter. This one's titled The Circle. We were in person last week. That was really nice chatting about episode one, The Homecoming. This is The Circle. What did you think of the meat and the sandwich, the middle of this three-parter? What did you think of it?
I think it was pretty great. I mean, this is sort of where, kind of the goal of the storytelling that's going on in this show is, where we're telling a bigger story. It's very much, continuing in the, what's going on in the government reformation of Bajor. It's telling the bigger story, and I think they're doing a really good job. I like and hate to see Vedic Wynn show up. I like that they tied all those things in, and it's a lot of fun.
Vedic Wynn sucks. Who's Vedic hunk of man meat? Who is that one?
Vedic Barile.
Barile?
So we met him last season.
I know him. Yeah, I know him. I just was wondering what his actual name is. Barile, can you spell that?
I'm going to go B-A-R-E-I-L.
Okay. B-A-R-E-I-L. At least I know we're pronouncing it the same way. Okay.
A-Y-E-L or something. But yeah.
All right. I cut you off. Tell the people where we met him last.
Yeah. So he was sort of the voice of reason when we had the bombing of the school. And, when Wynn and some of her faction were trying to separate out the Bajorans based on Mrs. O'Brien trying to teach the students that the wormhole is a astronomical phenomenon as opposed to a religious phenomenon. He was sort of the, like, hey, everybody calm down. Like, this is religious stuff. We're not going to get a human science teacher to hawk our religion, basically. Right. And he sort of just did that and then went off to, like, the monastery.
Right. Yep. And he, if I remember correctly, he also seemed to be the dark horse candidate to replace. He was one of two, right? It's Vedic Wynn and then Vedic Barile that were the two front runners, or at least the two candidates to replace the Kai.
Yes.
And he was behind. He was not the favorite to do it. It didn't seem like in the conversation. It also still seems like he's not the favorite to do it. And it seems like he is constantly bucking up, running up against Vedic Wynn.
I think that's a good summary. The way you referred to him made me curious, sort of what he's done as an actor. Cause like, he's not familiar. And
when I call him hunk of man meat.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, because we have a dreamy sex scene with Kira, this episode where Kira dreams about hooking up with him. That's why I called him that.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with, him.
Fine looking man. That's where it came from though. It seems like Kira has herself a little bit of a crush because here's the thing. If she didn't actually have some sort of strange feeling for him, then she could have laughed off the dream, but instead she lied to him about the dream.
Yes.
So that tells me there's something there. Yeah. See, look at me paying attention to plot.
Yeah. But this was basically one of his last acting roles.
Oh, really? Did he die?
That is not super clear on IMDb. I'm going to look him up otherwise.
The internet's got to know.
I mean, 100%. Like, he's going to be.
So while you look that up, I'd like to point out a couple of things from this episode that I did like. Why, BJ? Because I'm a positive guy.
That's good.
So my complaints about Sisko from last season were that he played the role very flat. and that it was a boring character. And I felt like the actor was mailing the whole thing in. We're only two episodes in, small sample sizes, they would say in your discipline. Small sample size. However, bring in the heater with both episodes. I felt like it's a slightly different, it's not a completely different Sisko character, right? You're not like head on a swivel, like who is this person? But you're seeing more emotion, more investment in the scenes. I feel like maybe somebody passed him some notes. Like, hey, occasionally Sisko's going to care about what happens on Deep Space Nine, and you should show the audience that you care. And it's much better. It's a much better leader. I'm excited when he becomes part of the plot now. I found myself really looking forward to the Sisko scenes this episode, which was not something I experienced very much in season one. So shout out to Sisko. And I'd say the second thing I really like is anytime they deputize Quark, I'm in on the episode. That's a real cheap way to get me in on the episode. If you're in season, let's say we hit a season five lull. I don't know what season five is like. Well, let's say we're in season five and it starts to get a little boring. Maybe one of the actors left for movie roles or something. And they need a cheap pop for me. They need to get me excited real quick. Just start the episode with, you know, Odo being like, Quark, today you're the deputy. Or I'm throwing you in jail. And Quark goes, okay, I'm the deputy. And I'm like, okay, sold. Fucking sold on this episode. Let's go. Always get excited with Quark gets deputized. And then I guess the last thing I would point out this episode is that they realize that the character, it seems to me that the people writing the show realize that the character of Kira is, her plot is interesting. So they continue to focus on her. I was a little worried when they were shipping her off the ship that we wouldn't get a Kira focus in episode two. And they seem to understand. They got interesting characters galore in the show, but she's the most interesting considering the overarching Federation Bajoran Cardassian plot.
Yep.
Those are my things.
Yeah. All good things. I also think that they're pushing depth into what was an interesting character in the first season in her role and like as a window into Bajoran society. And now it's like we're getting more and more of her as a person at the end of last season and into this season.
Yes, agreed.
And I like that she has, it's interesting that she has a crush on Vedic Boreal. It's also interesting to me, and I wonder if they haven't really decided yet at this point in the story, what the, are they going to go Catholic Church where the priesthood is celibate, or are they going to go, you know, Jewish religion, other religions where like, yeah, no, go have a family, like, you know, do your thing. This isn't like a, you know, either or situation. There's your personal life and then there's your religious life, and that, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. So I feel like there's a little bit of is he allowed to, that's still up, like unclear.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I was wondering that as well. I was also wondering, is this something that is kind of known? Have they broached this subject anywhere or whatever? It sounds like they haven't up until this point, if you're having the same thoughts. So maybe we'll get that answer at some point. It'll be tough for Arkira to actually admit to this guy she likes him. It's going to be like fucking,
yeah,
oh my God, pulling teeth with her. It will not be easy. It is kind of killing that we got, you know, I spent a good 10 minutes telling you how, I'm not saying Quark is going to end up with Kira, but if Kira was going to end up with someone, Quark is the right person for her. And then they just smash that in the first 7 minutes of the show, of episode two. They just go, nope, we have a love interest for her. It's this guy.
I mean,
unbelievable.
He's also, he's an interesting choice, but he's an interesting choice, but he himself doesn't seem really interesting. Like, he's powerful. He's like well situated in a role that kind of matches hers. Like, you know, they're at like similar levels of their organization kind of deal.
Sure. Yeah.
But personality wise, so far what we've gotten is kind of one note. I mean, she's also like started out a little bit more one note, so maybe we'll see more about him, but like he doesn't have the flair that Quark has.
Woo. Yeah. No, he doesn't. Although who does? Whomst among us, BJ, has the flair of Quark. I still think it would be better for her to end up with Quark, but it seems like they're definitely going this route that she's going to have a thing with this guy. And maybe they'll talk about if his religion allows it, et cetera. I'm sure he'll be in a like a fight to the death with Fettes Gwynn over the head of the Bajoran church. And yeah, I think that entire plot line is really good. I appreciated helpful Dax. Dax was very helpful this episode. Shout out to Dax. Appreciate that. We're also getting a more direct Odo. Odo has increasingly had enough of everyone's shit. Not that he didn't in season one, but it seems like they're really up in the ante there.
Yeah.
What else did we get this episode that was fun? We got Jake, a little bit of Jake, who wasn't so bad. The sort of dad, you got to come see this bad news scene. That was okay. I think the
Yeah.
actor did okay there. We've been hard on Jake, but that was an okay scene. All in all, I felt like this was a pretty good episode. It does feel like they're drawing this three-parter out in what could have been a two-parter, but I was fine with this episode. It was moderately entertaining. And I hold out hope that the quality of the first two episodes that I've seen indicates an increasing overall quality of the show. That maybe the writing's a little tighter. Some of the character development is just they know their characters a little bit better. And hopefully the show continues in this vein because these first two episodes have been pretty good in my mind.
So I think I sent this to you, but there was an article that I saw recently that apparently the like showrunner slash writers snuck in this like these episodes into the show. And
What?
the
Snuck them in.
yeah, so I'm trying to remember his name. It might
Sneaking in
be.
episodes of a television show seems a rather hard thing to do, considering they have to, like memorize the lines and record the actors and act the scenes.
Yeah. So it might be Rick Berman, but I'm not 100%. But basically, the person and some people sort of overseeing the show, would ask like, all right, let's see some episodes and what you guys are thinking. And they would show them the one-off episodes and like the scripts for the one-off episodes and say, yeah, here's what we're doing. And then they would make these shows and it would work, but like this wasn't the thought process of buying another Star Trek show.
Sure. Yes, I'm following. So I have a question for you. You sent me a video on text message of Brandon Sanderson, who was commenting at a con. He was, I think it was a very recent one, and he commented that this was the very best Star Trek. Deep Space Nine is the best Star Trek. He was quite clear about that. I looked up other clips of him espousing the same theory. He thinks this is the he didn't watch it at the time. He was in college. He was too busy. Crazy party, and Sanderson was out there just,
Yeah,
rip,
BYU going all those
just
ragers.
just ripping caffeine-free Pepsis and drinking and eating pizza. But he was going wild. But he didn't watch it in college, watched it now, thinks it's his favorite Star Wars ever or Star Trek ever. My question to you is, you've talked about your first viewing of Deep Space Nine as a basically a kid, like an adolescence, right? And how there were parts of it that were good, but there were a lot of parts of it you had to hand wave. You weren't that interested in. You didn't like it as much as the Next Generation. How about in this viewing? Like for not I'm not talking about between then and now. I'm talking about like as we're watching the podcast now, as you're revisiting the show. Is it changing the rankings for you? Are you appreciating it more as an adult? Because I specifically got the impression from Sanderson that his opinion was Deep Space Nine is the most interesting to me as an adult. That's the most interesting Star Trek to me as an adult.
This is further cementing. This is my favorite Star Trek as a show, as an
Hell yeah.
entire show.
Hell yeah. Hear that, everybody? We're covering the best Star Trek.
We are. So the tough part is the Next Generation has nostalgia for me and it has better episodes. The peaks of like a single episode, there are single episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation that are great. As an entire body of work, it's not telling a big story. And so the big stories that it starts to tell are kind of boring, in terms of Star Trek. It's Star Trek that everybody's encountered essentially by now. There's a whole fight with the Borg. It's sort of the big bad of Star Trek for, a really long time. It's like, well, you're going to be assimilated. Resistance is futile. It's sort of, what is everywhere,
Yep.
and it's the big bad. Sort of not unlike like the Daleks of Doctor Who and stuff like that. And I would say that, to a certain extent, the Doctor Who that I watched, which was pre Renaissance, I would say Doctor Who back in the old days, when BBC had no budget to throw at it. The Daleks were kind of cheesy, kind of like, okay, kind of whatever. But they were a big deal, and the Borg were a big deal, but like it didn't make for the interesting episodes of that really talk about morality, who we are as a species, the things that we sort of collectively believe in, and a message of hope. It's this is a cool fight scene. And so when I was younger, it was more fun, but it's sort of a little bit more the empty action of the MCU as opposed to something that's a lot more thought out. Like we're getting in Deep Space Nine and things like 12 Angry Men. 12 Angry Men really has a exploration of truth and character development and also all those other things. And I think it's stuff more like that that you get out of the really great episodes of The Next Generation. So there's that hard to I mean, easy to explain, but like, what's your favorite show? It's like, well, there are episodes of The Next Generation that are my favorite, but as a story and as the long form series, Deep Space Nine is 100% there just because of how in depth and how interesting the stories are.
I think you have to say that a show who soup to nuts is better than a show that might have some standout individual episodes. I think you have to go with the soup to nuts show, especially when you're dealing with shows that are this long with this many episodes. So that's interesting to know. I will say that like my experience with Deep Space Nine has been very similar to Kira's experience as the liaison officer of Deep Space Nine, in the sense that Kira shows up, she's like, I guess I need to do this. I'm gonna be here. I'm gonna be on Deep Space Nine because I'm supposed to do it, and I'm gonna give it my all. And she just is like, not that into it. You approach me, I want to do a Star Trek podcast. Sure, I'll do it. I'm watching the first few episodes. Yes, I will watch this 30-year-old show. I will do this for my friend BJ. I can't say I'm looking forward to watching each of these episodes. And then, there were some valleys in the middle of season one that got a little rough. But I am firmly at the point now where I look forward to watching it. Like the Season three of The Bear just dropped yesterday, right? From when we're recording. We typically release these about a week after we record. So by the time this gets released, The Bear will have been out for a while. But as we're recording, it's only been out for about a day. So I go to the gym today and I'm like, okay, I always have a treadmill show. I'm gonna hop on the treadmill, watch a television show. I of course it would be Bear season three. I'm a huge, huge Bear fan. This fucking show is great. It's one of the best shows on TV, one of the best shows of the past decade. But I had the thought, there was neural pathways, there were things. Thought processes in my brain firing, going, you could just skip ahead in Deep Space Nine and not tell BJ that you did it. You could just go and figure out how this three-parter is going to end, watch it and not even tell him, and try to pretend like you didn't know what it was on the podcast. And I thought, first off, no, podcast professional. Two, you dummy, watch The Bear. Like, you have the show to watch. But I think that just tells you in my mind where I've categorized it now. I've come to like the characters and I've really come around on the show a lot. And the first couple episodes of season two has me excited.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, everybody's disappointed when somebody pulls a Spencer. So like we can't do that.
No,
So
I didn't do it. I didn't watch it. I watched The Bear first two episodes, season three. They still got it. DJ, they still got it. People making that show. Unbelievable. Who are these people making The Bear? It's so fucking good.
I've seen some clips
Oh my
and
God, dude. It's so
it's one
good.
of those things like, all right, I do need to watch that. It looks quite good.
You would like it because you can deal with awkward humor. Matter of fact, you peddle in it. You are a merchant of awkward humor. And you also love food and you love restaurants and people who prepare food. And I think all of that together would make you would really like The Bear. I've really enjoyed that show. And it's one of those shows that like it's approaching Wire territory where it's like not a lot of people watch it, but the people who watch it do exactly what I just did to you and go, you got to watch it, dude, 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 dude. It's so good, dude. But you don't
It's a
want to ruin it.
proselytizing show.
Don't want to ruin it. And there's no way to explain it in a paragraph that gives, like, you couldn't do that. Was a big struggle we ran into with The Wire, was how do I explain to you how good a show is in a paragraph that's so big and vast and complicated? I can't do it. So all I can do is just mumble, "Hey, dude, you should watch it. Dude, come on, dude, just trust me." So that's my take on The Bear. But I did actually had a moment where I wanted to watch ahead to the third episode. Matter of fact, I'll probably watch the third episode tomorrow, and we won't record again for 6 days. That's how into it I am so far. I hope that lasts. I mean, we got a long way to go with this show, but it definitely the so when I this is a big face turn for me, right? Because I've been a little down on the show. I can't tell you how much of that is the Sisko character. When Sisko goes down and visits the folks in Bajor, and he's face to face with the Bajor military commander, like I was like rooting for him hard. I was like, tell this fucking guy that he is clearly a stooge and he's going to get a bunch of people killed. I was really into the scene. He sold me, and he acted like somebody we should root for, who has the best interest of everybody at heart. And then when he has the conversation with the Federation later, where he's kind of told, like, you got to get the fuck out of there, you know, you're deflated. And so that arc, those two events, is where I'm telling myself, like, holy shit, I'm a Sisko fan. Like, this thing is completely flipped on its head. I'm excited for his scenes. I'm following him. I'm into him, into what his character's doing emotionally. So that's a big part of the turnaround. Anyway, you want to hear me talk about The Bear some more?
Might have to do a separate pod. I like that you're getting into the show so much. This is the like these episodes are things that we've talked about on another one of our pod as the Wheel of Time turns that I'd go back and reread stuff and I've gone back and I've watched MASH many, many times.
Look
Lots
at
of things
you.
like that. And but when often when I reread things that I'm familiar
Super.
with, I'll do the highlights. Like I don't need the filler chapters. I'll skip parent chapters. I'll skip some other
How
things like that.
disrespectful.
I Perrin can take it. Perrin doesn't know any better. He'll just ignore his wolves and it'll be fine. So this is like prime early DS9 right here. This is like where we get such interesting good characters to look at a political struggle for power and what that means. And it's I just like it's just super interesting to me that it's such a sort of simple and basic story, but like you can see parallels to it everywhere. Like
Yes.
it's so it's stuff like this where this is the point of sci-fi that it's holding up a mirror to society in like a different setting. You can say just art does that in general, but like a lot of the times sci-fi and fantasy talks about things that are part of our human experience and does it in a fantastical way, but I think it's a way that sometimes makes it easier to talk about those things.
Yes. Yeah. That's a pillar of the appeal of fantasy, is that you create a world where you can work in these things and you don't have to address them as directly and as, you know, sort of dripping with emotion as it would be. Is it, you know, if you're reading, like, you know, you're talking about like poverty and you're reading Angela's Ashes, it's like, it's very direct. It's such this real world thing. But if someone's poor on the streets of Alethkar, you know, it's more digestible because you're in this fantasy world. You still care, certainly, but it's an entry point into situations and emotions for people who otherwise might not seek that type of media out or reject it. And the real good fantasy authors and the real good fantasy creators are the people who interject that, those feelings, those stories that are happening in the real world that oftentimes people who run to fantasy are trying to get away from. And it still helps them deal with it, right? And this show, right out the gate, decided we are going to talk about war, the effects of war, and big countries, big societies controlling little ones. And we're going to talk about those dynamics. And they're still running with that, and I like that.
So I'm going to give you a major spoiler for an
Oh no.
episode sometime down the line. I have no idea. I have no memory of when it is. But
Hopscotch Returns.
That would be unfortunate. That there are some nadirs like that coming up, but none quite as rough, but some one-offs that are not great. But what's really funny is almost every Star Trek that I know of, maybe the original series didn't, but I just don't remember. But pretty much every Star Trek does a time travel episode where they come back to some point on Earth. And sometimes it's in the past, sometimes it's in the like in the near future, something like that. We are in the year of a Deep Space Nine Return to the Past.
Woohoo! Is that
And
season two?
I don't remember what season it is. I can look it up, but it's just really funny to me that like they did a sometime in the future, these are the things going on Earth, and let's talk about something that is it was a an issue at the time and things like that. But it's really funny to me that we have now caught up to their future past or whatever.
Yeah, you run the issue with that, right? When you set your future not far enough in ahead, you start to you run into issues when people are watching it in that year going, wait a second, this isn't too different than it was in the 90s. I mean, that is sort of that like the lasting sort of the lasting legacy of the last 20 or 30 years is that things have kind of been the same. I mean, cell phones, rise of social media, for the most part, borders, the borders of the countries that exist, right? There's not been like massive change in the countries that exist, some, right, but not massive. There's not been massive change in lifestyle, what people do. There's not been like a, well, now we don't use cars, we use spaceships that fly in the atmosphere, right? That none of that, none those big things haven't hit and haven't changed. So I don't know, maybe when we fight, we get to like some of the Star Trek years, it'll still be like, people riding around in a Lexus.
Still do this, doing the same things. It also is funny that to a certain extent, probably some of the reasons that phones are the way they are is because of Star Trek. The original series communicators had basically a flip phone, and that's how they communicated. And so, the tablets that they do work on are mighty similar to the tablets that we have, and maybe that's the most efficient way and the most sensible way to do things. But to a certain extent, like the prognostication of not prognostication, but the like the people who are inventing those things are probably Star Trek nerds as well.
You think the tail's wagging the dog? You think they saw it on Star Trek and went, I'm going to make one of those?
I think that there is almost definitely an aspect of, hey, I'm pretty sure we can make one something like that. Let's do that.
Look at you, like shots at Apple. They're just fucking infringing on Star Trek IP. That's all that's going on there.
I mean, if we're gonna shoot those shots, Apple just does a prettier packaging of what somebody else did.
Yeah, exactly, Apple. But unfortunately for you, all your friends have Apple phones, Apple tablets, and you are a Green Bubble person. And I actually do you a big favor by doing this podcast with you because most people have rejected you completely now.
Yeah, I mean,
They don't even speak to you anymore.
I am so grateful at how accepting and lenient you are of my alternative lifestyle,
You're a
because a
Green
lot of
Bubble.
people, probably would have shunned me and cut me out of their life, and I appreciate that you are as accepting you as you are.
Send you to a monastery.
How about you move rocks for a little bit, make them pretty,
Make them straight, please. Can you make them straight? Maybe I'm just crooked. Oh, Kira, you're not crooked. You don't believe that, do you? Come on, Kira. You're fine. You're fine. She's fine,
Yeah,
right, BJ? She's fine.
she is. So, I mean, we keep coming to, and I keep trying to make excuses for it. And I think I just need to stop. But there are aspects and lines like that where I feel like stuff like that is a little bit more of a thing of the past, especially with streaming like 8 to 10 episode shows, that the writing is a little bit tighter. And the dialogue is a little bit more seamless. And I mean, I think to a certain extent, it's because A, everything has gotten better, and B, people gen like we don't watch bad shows, like not bad per se, but like the mediocrity has fallen away from like show recommending. Like, I'm not gonna recommend a C plus show to you. And so like they're there, but you know, they're less apparent. And so like we can consume just the cream of the crop because there's almost an overabundance of television.
I think that sometimes in our desire to contextualize art over time, we lose sight of the fact that some art progresses in a society and just gets on the whole better.
Yeah.
Not each individual case, but you take the aggregate quality of said thing through some commonly accepted definition of quality, and it's certain art does improve over time, right? No doubt. Over the last 4,000 years, our ability to paint has improved. Like, we're better painters now over the last 4,000 years than we were 4,000 years ago, right?
Music, all those things.
I think that television has just gotten better. And I
Yeah.
think it's okay to say, I think it's okay to say they take more time with it. They take it more seriously. They have better writers. They have
Yeah.
better people. They have shorter episode demands and longer lead times to make it better. So they have longer to make these episodes, and they typically get better actors who and better directors who get better performances out of those actors than we had 30 years ago. It doesn't mean that all television shows 30 years ago are bad, right? This is a really good television show. I was just telling you that I was thinking about watching it instead of The Bear, which, by the way, I don't know if I've mentioned it. The Bear's really good, but
You should watch it. Is
I
it better
still
than
think,
Deadwood?
dude, it's so good. Have you seen Deadwood? I mean, Deadwood's fantastic. They really should have not stopped that show when they did. But I think it's okay to say that TV has improved over time. And I
Yeah.
don't think in order to, and I don't think when you do that, you have to be the person that says everything that it's like a, that is like new and slick is better. I would argue that the bulk of mass distributed movies that come out now are worse than they were 50 years ago. I think that art form has slid in quality for a lot of different reasons. And I think that the quality of television shows has increased. So that would be my take on that, is that it's kind of okay to just say, you know what? They made shittier TV back then than they do now. So sometimes you get things like, sometimes I'm crooked.
Yeah.
That wasn't a
Yeah,
very nice, that wasn't a very nice impression of Kira. I like Kira.
I like here. I think the actor does a good job. I think we get all of those things, and I think that the importance of television and how we've decided to make and consume it has changed so much that it feels like an unfair comparison. I mean, it's like
Sure.
comparing a stand-up special to Saturday Night Live. Like, you know, they spent a week, maybe a little bit more, maybe a month writing jokes and you know, getting skits done and whatever else. I mentioned Wheel of Time, and you know, there are a whole bunch of other shows that take 2 to 3 years from
House of the Dragon, good Lord. Long time.
Yeah, and so like when you have 2 to 3 years between seasons rather than maybe 6 months,
They didn't even have that, right? Because they finished it. I read this. They wrapped filming for this show in, I think it was March of that year, probably February or something like that, and started up again in July. I mean, that wasn't much time at all.
And so you know, the turnaround that you're looking at for arguably like one and a half to 2 times the amount of television is just different. And so it's a, you know, graphic novels and you know, Saturday morning or Saturday paper cartoons are kind of the same format, but like they're just completely different things to consume. And comparing them, I think, is reasonable, but you know, expecting them to be the same is hard. And
So
so,
I think if you say like a comic book versus Saturday morning cartoon, I think that comparison doesn't work for me. But I generally agree with your overall point that there are reasons and there's context you can put around why it's different now and why it's better now. But I still think it's okay to say there's a lot of reasons for this, but
yeah.
TV is better now. Like
Yeah.
I don't think you have to hide that and you know, I guess what I'm saying is I hope that when we contextualize these things, we don't get away from the fact that there is an overall quality change. And that's like, it's apparent. You watch it, you can tell
Yeah.
right away. Doesn't you when you contextualize it, doesn't change the fact that it used to be worse television.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I guess what Sorry, I didn't mean like Saturday morning, like TV cartoons. I meant like in the paper.
That's what I meant too.
Okay. I mean, but I guess to a certain extent,
Sunday
like,
morning? Is Sunday morning better? Is that when
I
the
don't know,
comic?
whatever it is, but it's just the, I feel like, even like lines that sort of take us out of it, kind of like that, are kitschy, but it's also like there is going to be some of that because, you're trimming out a year of sitting with the show.
Yeah, I don't know. And I guess like if you consume fantasy media, you can get past a line like that. Like I'm reading a lot of Brandon Sanderson right now. Like, and Brandon Sanderson will throw in a line from time to time where it is like, ugh, like you just hard groan. You're like, how did that get through the 75 edits that you do on these? Like, same thing with Martin. Martin will always have a line where it's like, and I'm gonna go blue here. So if you got kids in the car, go ahead and pause it. But Martin always has a line where it's like, her dripping wet cunt was the size of a fucking, the size of her tits and the ass and the this and the that. And you're like, whoa, dude, like not necessary, totally cringy, out of character or out of pocket for this show and this story. Sanderson's usually is something like a really bad cringy joke, like a dad joke that he's thrown in. Will usually be in there. And Robert Jordan was always about tugging braids and touching boobs. And so like all of these mediums have this sort of these moments in fantasy, we just have to kind of toss it. And I think I've figured out that on this show, it's going to be the occasional like overly dramatic line, which by the way, as a wrestling fan, I can deal with somebody just saying something nonsensical and you have to just go with the story. Happens every Monday and Friday. It's totally fine by me. So as long as I'm enjoying the rest of the story, it's okay. But I guess I just hang out with a lot of people who are, if not intellectuals, they fashion themselves intellectuals, who if you say something as basic as, well, television's better now, they want to give you a 7-page paper on why. And I'm like, true. However, conclusion, television better now, still true. Like, and it's sometimes it's that simple for me.
That's fair.
Was that so brilliant you can't think of anything to say?
I still have some of the same arguments that I had before, but like, we have gotten to a point where we basically agree, and I'm not gonna
It's
like
a little hard to
getting
argue because I'm saying you're right, you're right, you're right. However,
Do you know about the greatest line from The Adventures of Hercules?
no.
So Kevin Sorbo, the Apocrypha, and I don't know if he's confirmed it, is that he misread a stage direction as a line. And so at some point in the show, he gets some bad news or whatever, and then he belts out disappointed, and it's just the funniest thing. And so every so often when we get a line like, well, maybe I'm the one that's crooked, it's just like it kind of reminds me of that, and it's just like it feels like if you were it feels like they don't trust their audience, and so they're giving you the stage direction, like they're not giving the audience the leeway to figure out that she's turning her frustration inward,
So, yeah, go ahead.
and so they're saying it out, like they're saying it out loud, and this goes back to my talking about, watching this at a dinner table or something like that, where it's just like you can quickly get what's going on.
So I feel like those moments, first off, reading the whole script, right? Like the one of the things that a joke with Spencer and I doing Mangum Talks TV, where we re review different television shows. And one of the things I tease him about is he always wants things to be left unsaid. He wants things to be left unsaid. And I'm like, well, for an attorney, it's pretty fucking bad guidance. Like, yeah, just like leave it unsaid. And like, then you have a bunch of people who watch your show unclear about what's going on. But a little bit of it can be left unsaid is okay. Like with Kira and the lines and the rocks, I take your point. It's a good one, which is she's twisted up inside. There's imagery on the screen connecting you to that. She doesn't have to explicitly say it. But the moment you talked about with the disappointed, like that thing, those moments never work if they try to manufacture them. And a lot of kitschy media tries to
Oh,
manufacture them. This is
100%.
absolutely something I know enough about this. I'm not a big fan, but I know enough about anime to know they often will try to create these moments in anime. And it doesn't work if they're trying to do it. It only works when it's like an organic thing where they were earnest and now we all can point and laugh.
Yeah, I I think you are very much right in the this is the meat of these these couple episodes. In some ways I would say this is the sauce of the pizza. We had the bread in the first episode, and I think the next episode is some melted cheese and maybe some pepperoni.
Wait a second. This is a very interesting pizza analogy you've touched on here. I'm going to digress the podcast. If you want to hear about our pizza takes, you can skip ahead or bail on us. You think these are relatively equal parts of a pizza, bread, sauce, cheese? You think this is of a kind, comparable things?
So when you say comparable, which one would you take away and still call it a pizza?
Well, sauce, 100% out of 100. I mean,
Your
sauce is,
grilled cheese?
well, first of all, open face with a crust, and pizza dough is different than bread dough. So very different than a grilled cheese. I think that sauce is the most expendable part of any pizza. I need very little of it, if any.
Flatbread.
Sure.
You get a dry product.
If you take pizza dough, and you form it like a normal, 2024 American, gastropub flatbread, and you put flatbread things on it, and you bake it. Yes, I'm willing to call that a pizza. Like, the pizza dough is what makes it a pizza, and the fact that it's open face and you put cheese on it. But like, the sauce, I feel like you just disrespected the episode here.
Interesting. Because I would say, to me, a good sauce is integral to a good pizza. Like, I'm fine with cheesy breadsticks. Like, we got Gumby's all the time in undergrad, and it was a fine thing. And if you didn't have marinara sauce to dip it in, like, we were in college, you ate it.
The
But with
sauce is
it,
very unimportant to me.
interesting. Is it too much like soup? Like, where are we going? Like,
No, you're taking everything to the
I
extreme. It's just that I don't need, I just don't, I feel like that is the part of the pizza that often gets lost, is less important. And I've had very good pizzas that have very little sauce on it. I'm willing to go so far as to say that
Interesting.
a little sauce is necessary, but I wouldn't say that it's on a level with the bread and the cheese. Like, in my mind, that analogy you just said that Homecoming was the reason that it's Star Trek, is the definition of Star Trek. The Siege is the best thing in the three episodes. It's the most enjoyable, and the circle you can forget.
Interesting. I think you have problematic takes on pizza. So I'll have to figure out another analogy when we come up with these multi-part episodes.
You must be like a deep dish guy. Do you like the sauce so much you're okay when these maniacs put it over top of the cheese and like make it a casserole?
My problem with that is the ratios. And it no, I don't like that. But I think a reasonable coverage of sauce under the cheese is what makes it balanced. And so I think you can make decent flatbread, but I think just bread, if you took away the sauce from a reasonably good pie and just had the bread and the cheese, it wouldn't be particularly good.
Last thing I'll say on pizza. I was
Okay.
recently in St. Lucia. I went to St. Lucia, which is another country, but it's an independent country, but also part of the Commonwealth that Great Britain is over, right? So loose relationship with Great Britain, but mostly independent. So I noticed something about America that is slightly different in certain parts of America than it is in relatively monoculture countries, right? Like the St. Lucia is that when these mono, I'm using monoculture here because like that's the closest thing I can get. I understand it's not a perfect term for what my St. Lucia is, but it's closer, right, than I certainly experience in the cities I live in America. So you're in this monoculture, and they introduce something like pizza and pizza restaurants, right? And when you get the recommendation, there's a validity that comes with people of that culture or the perceived culture that created it making it. So I got a lot of this in the taxi. You should go to that pizza place. They got real Italians in there. There's real Italians in there working. And I was thinking to myself, like, can you imagine if you were like, I don't know, fucking Detroit, and somebody was like, you need to go in there because they got a real Italian working in that. Like, it's just so different with the culture of what you experience. And that made me laugh a lot. So that's one thing I noticed when I was in St. Lucia about the pizza, is that there was this street cred given to, there's an Italian making it. in a way that I don't, I'm not sure that you or I would ever put that much emphasis on the nationality of the person who happens to make the pie, right?
Yes. But I would say that there are cuisines that I don't disagree with that take. But
Oh, sushi.
Okay. Yeah. But the take that I will always have is that a good ethnic restaurant in a reasonably large city should not be mostly full of white people. But that this is.
Well, talking about the customers.
Yes.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But the who happens to make it? Like, so the comparison I was able to draw is a lot of places in America, people will say that the sushi is not right or will make you sick or something if it's not somebody of Asian descent back in some sort of white jacket and a top hat making it, like as if sushi is like something that they like sprinkle like magical Asian like dust on and that's what makes it edible raw fish. That does happen. I'm not saying America's like can't do that, right? It does happen occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
But you certainly see it a lot in monocultures. And now I will attempt to bring it back to Star Trek. This would be like, VJ, if we were at Dragon Con and you walked into one of the Deep Space Nine panels and it was nothing but 17-year-olds and 15-year-olds, you'd be like, this panel is going to suck. They cannot talk about Deep Space Nine at a level that I'm going to appreciate.
100%. It's
so do with that what you will.
it'll be really interesting to see what demographics are there, because this type of storyline reminds me more of we go back to it a lot, but like West Wing, where we're really dealing with very political things, and you sort of have to understand the world to a certain extent to understand like where these political machinations are coming from, why people like are portrayed as bad, and what they're doing might be considered that way. And we get a little bit more heavy-handed in Star Trek, because it makes sense to be heavy-handed when you're telling stories with morals, basically. But I think it the context is incredibly important. And speaking of things from the episode, you will appreciate this. I wrote, "Is that Vedic Barayal's music?" And a wink when he walks in, because it's just like,
oh yeah, swag,
100% swagger, and just he's throwing eyes. It's he's making eyes at Kira too, and it's funny, and I'm here for it.
Oh, I still think that if Kira wants a comfortable relationship that's going to be the best for her long term, she needs late night liaisons with Quark. But if she's looking for a relationship and somebody who is her counterpart, like an actual partner, I think she might have the right person. Because as you established, there's a lot of parallels in these characters, right? Their relative place in the organizations they sit, how they approach the reconstruction of Bajor, how they the approach military and diplomatic relations. They have a lot of similarities. A lot of couple circles blending on that Venn diagram.
I think the best thing I can say about the two choices is Kira will smooth her rough edges with Barayal, and Quark will appreciates her for who she is, as opposed
Thank
to
you.
Who she could be.
Yeah, you're on the ship and train. Look at that. You're an ally here with Quark and Kira. I appreciate that you're helping me out with this. You're right. He would not try to change her in the way Vedic Barayal is going to try to change her. Obviously, we all know.
Yeah,
that.
I think he would. He might like try and redirect her anger and things like that. But like, he's going to tell jokes about it.
Right,
like, I think eventually she'll laugh too.
Please don't throw me through this wall. just throw that lamp against the wall, please. Not me. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be a lot of dicey situations with those two. We'll have to see how this obvious love triangle plays out. Hey, can I slightly tweak our learning about the Federation segment to something else?
Yeah.
At least for the next couple episodes. I'd like to try to predict what the Federation's going to do. because there's so much mystery in this show about what the Federation thinks, how they're going to act, because you're getting these very overt postures from Bajor. Like Bajor, the people are kind of like, what you see is what you get with them. The Cardassians, if you just assume worst intentions, you kind of know where they're coming from. The Federation is still a mystery at this point in the story. I think that our guy Sisko is going to stick around on Deep Space Nine to try to work this thing out. Meaning, when I say work this thing out, it's to stop the coup because the Bajoran military is not going to do it. And he'll be successful, and I think he will get fired. It'll be a brief firing. It'll be for an episode or two, but I think he'll get fired because I think that more and more we're going to get kind of what we got in a short snippet this episode, which is we learn that the Federation Bajor Alliance is for the most part in Sisko's head. It's Sisko and Kira. What we're getting that we as new viewers to the show are getting that confused, and they want us to, right? Because the Federation isn't really allied with Bajor. They want peace in particular areas, but they're not there to fight a war alongside the Bajorans. But Sisko kind of is there to fight a war next to Kira. And I think it's easy to get those things confused, and they're gonna tease that out.
It's a really interesting, it's always fascinating to me how very often there are such easy parallels to draw between shows like this and current events. And I would bet you there is, there's probably somebody in a nation somewhere trying to get them to be part of the UN or whatever and under the umbrella. And in real life, the Federation has a lot more power to decide what actually goes on the ground. And I think that one of the cool things about we're on a space station in the middle of nowhere is Sisko has power more like captains of a ship have power. Like
Oh, I like that.
when in the Navy, to a certain extent, when a captain is on a ship, he or she gets to decide all of the things for everybody there. It doesn't really matter who's there, but like as long as they're in power, they sort of just make all the decisions because they're kind of out on their own and they're the only boots on the ground. And that's sort of what Sisko is. And we've already had him be like, "Yeah, I get that you said that. Something else happened. I don't know what to tell you guys." And it's a very interesting mashup. And, I think we'll have more and more discussions of this as these types of story progress of what are the rules, what's right, and, what do we think of like how Sisko does things, how the Federation says he should do things, and how they feel about how he did things, and like where do we fall on that?
I have no problem on this podcast telling you when you make an analogy and I think it's wrong. I tell you that all the time. I'd like to now give you one where I think you fucking nailed it, which is him being the captain of a ship at sea, where there are, laws, norms, things that they should do, but for the most part, that guy's kind of got authority, at least in the short term. And that's kind of how Sisko's been operating. And I think that it's only natural that they're going to tease out that he doesn't speak for the Federation, and a lot of times he's doing things because Sisko thinks, I mean, he's influenced by the Federation, he believes in it, but he also is doing things he thinks Sisko is right. And I think that his relationship with Kira is good for Kira and Sisko, and likely will be good for Bajor. I don't know how good it will be for the Federation.
I also want to, maybe as a last little point, remind you how this all started, where we basically had him being burned by the Federation and put out here. And so I wonder how much the writer, like the writers took that into account, or this is just sort of me, giving, some backstory that isn't really being taken into account, but how much that the wedge of Picard, who, and oh, we saw the Borg in the first episode, basically in the flashback, like him being the one to sort of hand over the station and all those things gives Sisko a little bit more emotional leeway to not really participate as the moral authority that Starfleet seems to try and project.
Yes. I agree with that. And I think that's going to be a really fun tension. And it's coming at a time when I also feel like there's an uptick in quality from the performance of Cisco. So it's all kind of coming together for me. It's all happening, BJ, right here on Inside Trek, covering Deep Space Nine season two. I'm excited. Anything else you want to say before we wrap up this episode?
I'm really excited to see what you have to say about the siege. I'm very much looking forward to it.
All right, we're going to check it out next week, right here, same time, relatively, same channel for sure. Inside Trek will be here. It'll be fun. Maybe next week we'll talk about white sauce on pizza and what BJ thinks of it. Thanks for hanging in there with me. We'll be back next week to review episode 3 of season 2. See you then. Sweet.